Hi, everyone. Welcome to Mysterious Topics Podcast. This is John. Before we get started, if you're planning on doing any shopping at Amazon.com, please go to our website, MysteriousTopics.com, first, and click on our link for Amazon, and do your shopping then. It'll help us out without costing you anything extra, and we greatly appreciate your support. Now, today I'm going to be talking with someone who I have talked to before, Phil Parcel from England, and today we're going to be talking to him about a field that he follows very closely, and that is Bigfoot. So let's go to that conversation now. Phil Parcel is joining me today. I've talked to Phil before, Chuck and I both, in the past about some of his experiences, and today we're going to be talking about one of his favorite topics, one that he follows closely, and that is Bigfoot, or Sasquatch, or goes by many other names. Hello, Phil.
Hey, John. How are you doing today?
Good. So, in our conversations, I have come to know that you are a Squatchaholic. So, how did this happen?
Well, more Squatchaholic is a pretty good description. Anything cryptozoological, really, I've been interested in from a long time. I mean, my first, introduction to the subject was a long, long, long time ago with my father. I was hunting, must have been early 1990s, and I'm hunting in an area called Tring, and we were going through really thick undergrowth, really thick hedges, brush, just really low on the ground, and we were stalking some pheasant, which now sounds bizarre, but at the time it was good fun. And we've done this quite a lot in this same area. And we're stalking and we've got to the point where we can hear it really quite loudly squawking. So we've sort of signaled each other to, we're about 6 foot apart. It's really, really tall grass at this point. It's probably about, I don't know, 4, 5 foot-ish. Very, very overgrown, very thick. And we were crawling on the front, you know, on our fronts, air rifles in hand, going towards this sound. And we're both creating a trail. And we both sort of stop at this point, and we hear, as far as I can remember, we hear this really loud sound, sort of like a pff. And I thought, what is that? You know, I'm 11, 12, something like that at the time. I'm still quite young. Although I've been out hunting a lot, you know, at that point, I'm still quite young. So I've never experienced anything like this. So I'm sort of thinking, what was that noise? And then I hear again, poof. And I thought that I've never heard anything like that. You know, and I'm looking over to my father and he's just sort of looking at me with that same kind of, you know, what the is that sort of look, thinking, okay, this is new. This is new. What's going on here? And we continue to carry on forward. And then we heard this noise again, but this time it wasn't a single noise. It was a continuation of noises. And it just basically went, duff, 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 duff. And I'm thinking, that's not the walking gait of an animal with four legs. What? I don't understand what's going on here. So I'm looking again over to my father because, you know, I'm young at the time, thinking, well, I have, you know, way over my head. And he just looked at me with this kind of strange, kind of puzzled look. And I thought, okay, fair enough. And he sort of signals me to start coming back, as in reverse him. So we're parallel. We're about 6 feet apart between this grass, and the grass is a little bit thinner as it goes down to the ground. It's almost, it might have even been hay, actually, thinking about it, because it was sort of husky at the top and very thick, and lower down it was easier to see. And we hear this noise start, what's walking effectively, sort of doof, 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 doof. And it wasn't ground shaking or anything like that, but it was loud. And it clearly was bipedal. So myself and my father basically are now hauling our butts out of this area, you know, really low down so as not to draw attention to anything. And you can just hear it running around, and it was just duff. And it just sounded so bizarrely different from any person walking around. And we got out of the area into this little clearing, and we're both pretty much standing in a prone position with air rifles. Not that it would have made any difference, to be fair, but air rifles pointing at the direction that we can hear this noise, and this noise is running now. You just imagine a two-legged something running and the noise that it makes. And it just suddenly stopped. And then this noise just suddenly picked up faster, and just went off into the distance. To which point we both looked at each other and basically started walking rather quickly the other way. Got in the car, drove back, and we just started talking about it. And we were sort of thinking, what can you describe that as? You know, I said to him, well, tell me that I'm making something up. Tell me that I'm going nuts. And he just went, well, what do you mean? I said, well, I might be young, but I've ridden horses a lot. I'm around animals a lot. I'm in the wild. I know what deer sounds like. I know what badger sounds like. I know what every single kind of sounds that happen out here in this area, obviously. And that did not have the gait of a four-legged animal. That was on two legs. And he just nodded. And I thought, okay, no problem at all. And then he just wouldn't talk about it. He just completely closed up. And that's where that story ends, really.
Did either one of you see anything?
No. Neither of us saw anything. Nothing at all.
And you were pheasant hunting, and you had an air rifle, which is basically a pellet gun?
It's a pellet gun, a .22 caliber underlever pellet gun.
You must have done a heck of a shot to shoot a pheasant with that if it's flying.
Oh, no, we would stalk, and then we got pretty, not by today's standards, but by then, you know, reasonably decent powered scopes. And, you know, you take a decent headshot and it'd fall it pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So, you know.
That's still a heck of a shot.
It was interesting. It was interesting. So, that's basically what started my fascination with effectively what I now know as cryptids.
So at that point, did you ever hear of any kind of a cryptid, a Bigfoot or anything, or not?
No, never heard of anything like that at all. Completely, you know.
So did you ask your dad, like, what's going on? What could that be? Did he say anything about any kind of Bigfoot or anything?
Well, no. What he said, I can't quote him exactly, but we were driving back, and we were both, well, I can say honestly that I was pretty panicked, because I know what a person sounds like, and I know what a four-legged animal sounds like, and I know that it just didn't have the ring that a person wearing shoes or boots crunches through grass and crunches through the kind of landscape that we were effectively stalking in. So I imagine pretty much I did not shut up for the whole half an hour drive home. So, he was basically, I was saying, you know, what was it? What was it? What was it? And he wouldn't say anything. I go, what? And, you know, a long time afterwards, I couldn't get this thing out of my mind. By which time at that point, the internet wasn't really around. Well, it was around, but it wasn't as accessible as it is now. You couldn't just, you know, pick up an iPhone like you can now and type in bipedal animal and see what pops up. It wasn't really like that.
Right. Dial-up internet connection.
Yeah, exactly. Dial-up modems. So, you know, it's much more difficult to find out things. And what I eventually got out of him, and I'm, you know, pretty sure that we both knew what this smelt of, but he's just, after, you know, days and days and days and days, probably weeks of asking, what was it? What was it? Come on, tell me. Bear in mind, I learned how to hunt off my father, as I'm sure most young lads do, or off a mentor of some kind. And he just said, oh, it must have been a wild pig. And I just sort of looked at him and started laughing, saying, are you serious? A wild pig? Have you not ever heard how that sounds? You know, running through this is totally different. So yeah, that's what he tried to, I suppose, in a certain way, fob off to me is what it was.
Well, I would think he would just say, because if it sounded bipedal, as you said, I would think he'd just say, well, it must have been another person. Maybe it was a big person out there.
No, it didn't sound like a person at all. And the funny kick to this whole story is I actually found out by pure chance, I would say a year and a half ago, what it was. And this is the only encounter that I've ever heard. And I do listen and read, you know, it's a very big interest of mine, of what it was. And, ironically, it was nothing cryptozoological at all. It was not a Bigfoot. It was not a Sasquatch. It was not a Woodwose or a Yowie. It was an ostrich.
Really?
I found out years later, literally, as I said, like a year and a half, 2 years ago, something like that, from my father. He said to me, I saw a cutting in a paper, and he was talking about something, and I haven't spoken to him for a little while anyway, so, you know, it was a strange conversation. And he said to me, you know, do you remember that hunting trip? And I thought, well, yeah, I do. Well, I found something in the paper. And bizarrely, I'd actually had someone else say this to me as well, because, you know, it's not something you really readily share with people when at that point in time, you know, it's not really very open. The trouble with the Sasquatch and the Bigfoot groups and things like that, as in general, are they try and eat themselves all the time. It's very politically based, I suppose, in a certain sense. And he said, look, I found this cutting, and it was in a local paper, and it was a really old cutting, and there was an ostrich farm very local to where we had our experience. And apparently, so I hear from local people, occasionally one would get out, one would get loose. And obviously, to which I thought, well, I've got to go now and research ostriches and see what they sound like. And I can pretty much confirm, obviously I can't 100% confirm, as no one can, because unless you have a visual and an audio, you can't physically confirm it. But I listened to it. I thought, yeah, that's exactly what it sounded like. You know, even the acceleration of footsteps. It's just one of those things that you can't, it's quite unmistakable. If you watch National Geographic or something like that, and you hear, you close your eyes and you can visualize legs, bodies, muscles moving to create that sound, especially in a two-legged animal. It's easier to think of because obviously we're bipedal as well. So it's not as alien as it is to.
Yes. And they are, a huge bird, you know, big enough for a person to ride. So. They would have heavy footsteps.
Yeah. So ironically, the thing that got me into this subject initially is a very well known animal that is bred and obviously not indigenous to the UK, but they are still here. So yeah, that was the first thing that ever happened to me. And I suppose what got me interested in.
Yeah, that's interesting. A animal that we all know about got you interested in the whole cryptid field.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, as far as I'm aware, no one that I know of has ever had an encounter like that. Nobody has ever. And I actually went with my family to a local like farm where they keep, not exotic animals, but, you know, animals not indigenous to the UK. And I was looking at the rhea birds, and they also have a very, when they get moving, have a very similar sound to them, and are very similar. And you think to yourself, without physically seeing something, you can't diagnose what something is without physically seeing it, in my personal opinion. So that's where it all began, really.
And so recently you've started an organization or a club. Can you tell us about that and what kind of activities you do with that?
I haven't started it. I'm the UK, England, should I say, director of this group. It's the Jevning Research Group, JRG. You can find it on Facebook. Basically headed by a gentleman called William Jevning, who is an author, a friend, an author, and does a lot of research into factual evidence. The thing with, and I'm going to talk about this rather than talk about other organizations, purely and simply because I'm not into anything other than factual research, really. The Jevning Group is a group that is full of like-minded people. They have anthropologists, and also we are very keen on having skeptics in the group as well, because I'm sure that you've looked into Sasquatch probably a lot more than the average person ever has. And you realize that when you say the word Bigfoot or Sasquatch in a normal conversation, eyes tend to roll. You tend to get branded as a tin hat wearing kook, really, don't you? It tends to be, okay, he's a believer, which I've got no issue. Everyone's got their own opinion as far as I'm concerned. But the whole point of the Jevning Group is to gather information, to gather research, not hearsay, but interview real people, get real factual evidence, photographs, track prints, audio, and combine it as a whole, as a worldwide organization. Obviously, the Jevning Research Group is primarily your side of the pond in the States, but they also have in India, in Europe, in the UK, myself, don't want to leave anybody out. Blimey. In Australia, with the Yowie, Indonesia, it's all over the world. And we're trying to, as an organization, get everybody to gather evidence in the same way. We're trying to get everybody to basically look at the subject from a more scientific point of view. Instead of people, again, not naming any names, going into woodland and saying, oh, look, there's a broken tree. That must be Sasquatch. Or over here, more likely you'd say, oh, that must be Woodworth. Jumping at conclusions, should I say. We're more likely to take video or photographic evidence of that break, work out the splintering, you know, the weather conditions, the height of the break, the direction of the break, try and work out whether it is natural situation that would have caused that to fall, whether it was, you know, snow coverage causing it to snap, or whether it's something else. Basically, what we try and do is rule everything else out before coming to the result that makes the most sense at the end, where you tend to find a lot of people, if they found something, they will try and defend it to to death, effectively.
Yeah, and well, that's where people get the idea that people are just crazy and believing it, because they'll come upon what they think is evidence, which really isn't evidence, and they try to say that, well, this is absolute evidence that Bigfoot exists, when we haven't gotten anything like that yet. And so it would be great if we ever got that, but that's why, you know, Chuck and I really haven't gone into this topic very much in all of our podcast before this, because it's just all hearsay and speculation, and there's no real evidence that one actually exists. So to approach it the way you're talking, that's a good way to do it, and just hoping that at some point somebody gets some sort of credible evidence.
Yeah, see, the trouble with that phrase, credible evidence, I mean, if you look back at the Patterson-Gimlin film all those years ago, and you look back at that, and I know you did a podcast on that, I'm pretty sure you did, didn't you?
You touched on it, didn't you? But we've talked about it before.
See, the thing with, if a video or a production, like the Patterson-Gimlin film was produced today, then you could very easily say you know, with everybody, with the computer technology, the graphics, the rendering, the, everything that we have today, as in graphically orientated, that would be very easy to do. Let's be fair, wouldn't it? But you look back at the time that was filmed, you know, on, I think, it, was it 35 millimeter film, I think? On, you know, real film roll.
Yeah, well, it was, I think it was probably either 16 or 8 millimeter probably back then.
Yes, you are right. Yeah, it was, you know, not canister roll, it was, I can't think of a, effectively the big rolls, wasn't it?
Yeah, it'd be like a reel to reel of an 8 millimeter or 16, probably 8.
So,
no sound.
No, this is it. And you look back at that and you think to yourself, well, there's been so many people in the States that have tried to claim that that was them. There's been so many people that tried to claim that it was a suit and that they know the person who had the suit and who made the suit. And then you go, I can't remember his, I really should have written this down, but I can, but where, the guy's name who effectively done Planet of the Apes, I believe, done the costume design for that. I think, I'm pretty sure he's been quoted as saying, that's better. That's amazing. That's better than anything that I could have done. So that sort of goes to say about not the authenticity, because as you say, the only person that, again, subjective, but could effectively say that was 100% real with not one single shadow of doubt at all would have been Roger Patterson or Bob Gimlin.
I agree that even though many people discredited it and the one guy said that he was in that suit, like you said, they didn't have suits that good back then. And actually, you could see the breasts on it. And I don't know why anybody would make a fake suit to look like that. And I also saw a show on, I don't even remember, it may have been the, there was a Monsters.
Monster Quest.
Show. Yeah, Monster Quest show. Maybe it was that, or it was another show on History Channel or one of those shows where they really went into detail.
The locomotion?
On the film. Mm. Yes, and the way it walked. And they said a person in a suit would have a real difficult time walking that way.
Yeah.
You know, they just showed how far down the hands were in the motion. Said a person walking like that would have been almost impossible. They would have been, you know, they would have had to crouch, and this thing wasn't crouching. And so I have always felt that there was something to that.
Yeah.
But the thing is that I'm one of those people that I still am skeptical of the whole Bigfoot topic, because I just haven't, it hasn't been proven to me yet or to anyone. So that's why, you know, I don't think, if people think I'm crazy for talking about that, that's fine, but I still.
But you have to keep an open mind. You have to keep an open mind.
Yes.
But also, what I think is just as important as keeping an open mind on the subject is you have to look at it skeptically. You can't, you know, like the Jeffing Research Group do, like we're talking about it now. You can't 100% say that that was a Sasquatch. However, you can say that scientists that study bipedal locomotion can categorically say that to be able to do that would not be 100% impossible. That it, there is a slim chance of it doing. But the way that it walks, because it doesn't push off with its feet to walk forwards, it pulls with its front foot, pulling it forwards. And for someone not only to do that, but to think about that, to think I've got to walk differently. I mean, if you know, hats off to them. If that actually happened and it is, you know, not a true film, then to be fair, that's the most amazing piece of footage, excuse me, that I've ever seen. Because having seen things myself, I can confirm that that is very true to life.
Yeah, and I will say, anybody that hasn't seen it yet that goes online, you can go on YouTube and you can watch it. Your first impression would be, well, that's got to be a person walking, because it's not walking like an ape at all.
It's not
like a person.
Exactly, yeah.
You would think it's walking like a person, but then, as I said, this other show shows you that, no, a person can't walk that way. So it's not a person. It's not an ape.
What is it?
So what the heck is it? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? I mean, you can't categorize. I mean, I suppose this is the age-old question, even with people like myself who are really involved in the subject. There is a point where everybody has to make a small grasp at what they think it is. And I suppose, you know, we'll get into that later. But realistically speaking, it's not a man. It's not an ape, but it has characteristics of both. Hence, age-old legend calling them man-apes.
And I just looked it up, and it was a 16mm camera. He actually rented it.
Mm.
It says on May 13th, and he kept it longer than the contract, so he actually had an arrest warrant out for him for this. It was an expensive, at that time, a 16mm camera that he rented was $369 in value. So
yeah, back then that was a substantial, well, even now, but back then it's a substantial amount, isn't it? So
yeah, but part of the problem is that Roger Patterson, mm-hmm.
It was Roger Patterson, right?
He was kind of a person that had sort of scrapes with the law and sort of questionable behavior. So it makes the whole story easy for people to say, well, that was just Roger Patterson doing some of his things again. So I don't know. I suppose we can talk about this at some other point,
yeah, of course.
Because I haven't really done a lot of research on this in a long time. But that led to people being able to discredit it for so many years. And like I said, this show that I saw where they examined the film again was many years later. It was just within the last probably 5 years,
yeah.
And showing that there was evidence that it was indeed real, but it was discredited for many years. But it is the thing. I saw there was a movie at the theaters when I was a young kid that I went to see all about this film. It was kind of like a documentary film, whatever it was that was put out.
Oh, I wish I could have seen that.
Yeah, it is one of the first things that got me to even be aware of this subject.
Yeah. To most people, I mean, as I say, you know, the trouble with this subject as a whole, when you put it there in front of you on a table, is there is so many people, it's so easy to discredit it from so many people, because there is so many people out there trying to make a cash grab. There are so many people out there trying to just get attention. Look at me, look at me, look at me, look at me. You know, and it really does hurt and damage this whole subject of research. And that is what effectively, you know, the Jevning Research Group, this is it, hence in the title, this is what we are trying to steer well clear of. We have tracks. We have photographic evidence. We have numerous different items and audio. And the trouble with all of that is it's subjective. If you have seen something, or if you have heard something, if you're a hunter, if you're a woodsman or a mountain man, and you're out in these elements all the time, you know what the animals sound like. You know what they walk like. You know the gait. You know where to look for these animals. When someone that's been out there all their life, or not necessarily even all their life, but they work out there, I work outdoors every day, you know what things sound like. And when you come across something that you can't identify, that's when it starts to get a very grey, I suppose, kooky area. Because, you know, what can you say? People, hunters, as a rule, you know, don't generally like talking about it, because it just, even though they, if they have had an experience and it is a genuine experience, they're not trying to, you know, make a cash grab, as I said. They are very difficult to talk to, because you'll find that if it gets out that they have said that they believe in, to most of their friends, a made up, you know, it's the unicorn of hunting, isn't it? It's just a made up fairy tale that, oh, what else could be, you know, the tooth fairy is, you know, don't say it loudly because my child's asleep, but is Santa real? You know, it's one of those things where it very quickly snowballs on from a very real experience to a seemingly completely ridiculous situation. And I think that's where you've got to halt the line and say, I appreciate that you've had an experience. You're telling me you've had an experience. That's fine. Do you have anything other than talking about it to back what you have up?
Yeah, well, I think most of the hunters that I know around here, if they saw something like this, would, if they would say anything at all, they would think that it was either an escaped ape of some sort or some ape, some biological creature. Mm. But we'll get into that in a minute. I just wanted to know, have you had any actual sightings yourself that you saw a Bigfoot?
Yes, I have, yeah. Well, what I can only describe as something that isn't a human and something that isn't an ape. I've come a bit unprepared now. I can probably send you a transcription of this, but on January 31st of this year, in my local area, I'll say local area, it's too close to home, if that makes sense. I was out, because I work outside, as I say, you know, and every day I come past this, well, pretty much every day, I come past the same spot. I'm in a rural location. I'll just leave it at that. And I come past the same way most days. And my dog comes out with me. And I know you've got dog, you know. And I go to the same place to have a walk. Let the dog have a little run round. She comes out with me.
Yeah, we do the same thing here. And ours is out in the country, too. It's an old, where we walk, it's an old railroad line that's cut through the countryside. So you can go out there and walk for miles.
This is it.
Back and forth along the trail.
Yeah. And you just sort of get used to, I suppose, a certain walk, don't you? You just get used to an area.
Yeah, well, you know the area well, exactly.
Yeah, yes. And after a while of, I suppose it's the same as anything, after a while of looking at the same thing over and over again, I tend to put that into the category as furniture. You walk past the same tree and you don't really see it, you don't really remember it as you did when you first walked down there and thought, oh, that's a really nice oak tree, you know, it looks really old, you know. It tends to go into furniture. So we've parked in the lay-by, and I've said to Roxy, come on in, walkies. And she looked at me now, actually. And she sat upright, because she's in the car with me. She sat upright, and her head is on a swivel like a meerkat. And I'm thinking, well, that's bizarre. You've never not wanted to go out before. It was about half one, something like that. I can get all the exact information for you. I recorded it the day after I actually had the experience so that I wouldn't forget any part of it. And I'll see if I can send that to you as well to clarify anything. But it was between 1 and 2 o'clock, I think. It'd been a reasonably overcast day, slight bit of wet rain, what I call wet rain, very fine rain. And the dog just wouldn't get out. And I just thought, okay, fair enough. Another hobby of mine is rock crawlers, model RC rock crawlers. So I thought at this point in time, well, if the dog's not getting out, I'll leave the door open, see if she comes out. And obviously not into the roadway, onto the other way. And I'll just have 10 minutes play with the rock crawler. Because where we go, it's very thick undergrowth. There is a clearing, a power line clear cut all the way through, all the way up over the ridge line and everything. So that obviously with all the stumps and everything is really good for the model cars. So I thought, okay, fair enough. So I'm just, you know, pootling around with the model car, doing a particularly tricky ascent up this bank over roots and under roots and all that kind of thing. And I just hear a crack, a crack. And it wasn't wood on wood like you hear some people saying. It wasn't a tree knock. It was nothing like that. But it wasn't the sound of a tree coming down naturally. I used to do tree surgery for quite a long time. I know what a tree sounds like when it's coming down. And that did not sound right. And I thought at the time, that's strange. And then I heard this very strange noise that I can hear it in my mind. I'm not going to try and say what it was. Or should I say, I'm not going to try and make the noise, but it just sounded like a very off duck call. It just sounded almost right, but it just wasn't right. It just sounded like a very off game call. And that's when I sort of started to think, well, that's very strange. That's very, very strange. You know, starting to put, thinking, okay, what's that? what does this mean? What's going on here? And I'm standing on top of a bank, on like a bank, and the road is in between. If you can picture it, I'm probably about 15, 20 foot off the road, and probably about 15, 20 foot up from the road as well. You know, it's a bank that I'm going up with a car. And I've got my cap on because it's raining, very fine rain, but it's still raining. And I'm concentrating really on a particularly difficult bit of terrain I'm coming up. And as I finished it and I've got to the top and I just sort of thought, yeah, you know, result, that was a good drive. I've looked up and on the other side of the road, a fair distance away, was this, not a man, not a monkey thing. It was, the coloration was black. Black, like night black, not glossy black, not, it just almost seemed to like suck the light in. It was half behind a tree. It was around about my height. The arms came down much longer than a human's arms would. It was basically out of proportion to a human. The whole proportions were wrong. And as quick as I saw it, and I was obviously in a pretty much stared lock gaze at it, it just went back behind the tree. And I just, I'll be honest, I pretty much stood there. And what seemed like 20 minutes, 30 minutes, probably was only about 15, 20 seconds, but felt in my mind to be 20 minutes while I'm standing there thinking to myself, do I go over? Or do I run for the car and just drive off? And I'm sitting there just pondering. It's like 50-50, heads or tails. Drive off, go and find it. Drive off, go and find it. And this just went over and over and over in my mind for, well, as I say, what seemed like 20 minutes. And obviously I came to the conclusion of there's no conceivable way that I'm going to miss this opportunity, being interested in this subject, but never ever actually seeing anything before, and I've now physically seen something with my own eyes that I know is not anything indigenous to where we live. So I've pretty much, the only time that I took my eyes off these three trees all next to each other, as I'm in a profile, you've effectively got one and then one just slightly behind that tree crossing over to it, and then the other one crossing over to it behind that as well. So you've effectively like got three trees, all very rooted very closely, but, you know, quite, when looked at from my angle, was quite wide, could quite easily hide a person, an ape, a Sasquatch, or whatever. So I thought to myself, well, I have to go. I don't care about anything else right at this point. I've got to go over and stupidly try and either contact this thing or see this thing or acknowledge that what I've seen is there. So I've walked down, and the only time in that whole time frame between seeing it, looking at me, and then it going behind the tree and me getting to that tree was me slipping down the bank, or scrambling down the bank, walking across a road that was only 8 feet, and then scrambling up the other bank. And I went to those set of three trees, and there was nothing there. There was nothing there.
Now, was your dog there too much the time, or was she back in the car?
No, the dog would not get out of the car. The dog was looking.
She never got out.
The dog was looking back at that point in the woods all the time, which until obviously it happened, I didn't think anything more of it. You know, I just thought, well, it's strange she's not getting out of the car, but that's your loss. We could have gone for a nice walk, but no, okay, you've made the decision that you don't want to.
So in the time that you were scrambling over to the trees, there was no way that a big object like this could have moved away from the trees
any direction? Well, yeah, there is. Obviously, you can go straight back, because those three trees that are very close to each other effectively blocked out from the first tree to the end of the third tree, and the woodland just goes back and back and back, and you know, for miles.
Correct, but you would have been able to hear it and see it partially, I would think. Something that big moving through the woods, at least hear it moving, right?
I would have thought so, but I didn't. And as I said, there was only a space of 10 seconds between me scrambling down this bank, running across the road and scrambling up the other bank, that I didn't have my eyes on this, my eyes on it.
Well, the other thing is your description isn't necessarily of a classic Bigfoot. It's more almost like a shadow person or something along those lines, it sounds to me anyway.
Yeah, see, I struggled with this as well. Initially, before anything else happened, I came home and I never said I saw anything definitely. I saw something that was black, that was my height-ish, maybe a little bit taller, maybe a little bit shorter, but was completely out of proportion to a human. It was just, you know, even down to the legs were so much thicker than a human, so much more muscular than a human. And I just, I didn't know what it was. I thought, is it, as you say, is it a shadow person? Is it some kind of, I have no idea. Being as most of my life I've had strange things happen, I couldn't categorize this into a box that I've experienced before. So I thought, well, okay, fair enough. So effectively that's what led me on to research this area, which I call Area A. There's another two areas that I research, Area B and Area C, and I found, I suppose, substantial evidence in both of these sites. These are not public sites. These are privately owned estates. You have got public access, but 90% of people don't know about them, if that makes sense. So it's not something that, it's not the kind of place that people generally go. You can go there and you can, if you're crazy enough to camp out there, and you'd probably never be bothered by a human, for maybe months. It's just one of those places that is on close to a village, but nobody ever really goes there. It's a natural deer breeding ground. The deer there, there's so many deer there. It's just, I've never really seen anything like it. It's just an abundance of wildlife there. It's just ridiculous, but.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say before. You just reminded me when you said you heard that odd noise that you described but didn't want to recreate, but it sounded sort of like a sick duck or something. And the first thing that came to my mind when you said that was a deer, because a lot of people don't realize that deer do make noises.
Oh, yeah.
They kind of sound like grunts, and you could describe it sometimes, especially if it's a louder one, as kind of like a sick duck.
You know, yeah,
so
no, it does.
I could see. I was just thinking, did a Bigfoot like grab a deer and kill it right then? And that's what the deer was making that noise when you heard it.
It's
a possibility.
Yeah, I mean.
Or something else, a bear or something. But if it were I don't even know if you have bear in your area, but if it were a bear, you would think you would have heard a lot more of a squabble.
Exactly. I mean, the thing that you've got to bear in mind from my point of view here, being in the UK, we don't have bear. There is only one thing here in the UK that walks on two legs that, you know, that is around naturally in the countryside, and that is us. There is nothing else. We don't have any apes indigenous to the country. We don't have any, you know, great apes or chimpanzees. You know, we don't have any primates at all. We don't have any bear. We don't have anything substantially large apart from deer. And obviously deer are very, it's very obvious what a deer looks like, you know, although we do have small deers like monk jacks, which incidentally, if you've ever heard a monk jack, it's very confusing because they can bark like a dog and they can also cry like a baby. It's very, very strange. But believe me when I say the deer over here, they are very noisy. The reason that most people don't hear deer is because, number one, they don't really go out into a situation where you're going to confront deer. And number two, the majority of people that do, that aren't hunters, are very noisy. Their phones going off, they're clanking keys, they're walking over sticks, breaking brush down. Any natural wildlife that hears a human come in is just going to bolt straight away and you're never going to see it. So deers are very noisy naturally. I mean, I've been out in Area A for probably 150 hours, maybe more, maybe 200 hours. of just purely sitting down, watching, listening. And the area sometimes is just deadly still. And other times it will be just literally like a Mary Poppins movie, like a Mary Poppins film. You know, the birds will be tweeting, the deer will be hopping around, the hares, the rabbits, the pheasant, badgers, foxes, monk jack. You know, everything is just around you like you're not even there, not even caring that you're there. And then other times it will be completely, you could hear a pin drop. The silence is deafening, if that makes sense. And it just, the area is very strange. I mean, I suppose it is a very, very old, one of the oldest woodland in the UK, without sort of giving out where it is. And it does have a Bronze Age burial ground. Now, the Bronze Age burial ground, for ever since the history of where I am, they've had problems with, as in, you can't ride horses around it, you can't take animals around it, because they just bolt from it. They will not go anywhere near it for some obscure reason. Clearly they know something we don't. So in that sense, it is a very unique place that I just happened to stumble on. So yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where you just got to think to yourself, like I try and say to everybody else, I'm not jumping to a conclusion. I saw what I saw with my eyes. Nobody else saw it, just me and the dog, obviously, who knew that it was, whatever it was there well before I did, because she always bolts straight out of the car and she'll go and chase rabbits, you know, she'll go and chase monk jack. She'll just go out and just completely frolic in the countryside for a good half an hour and then sort of come back almost exhausted and pass out on the passenger seat. So she knew something was up even before we got there. But yeah, that's what led me on to start researching Area A, which is my primary research ground. Since then, I have found numerous footprints. I think I've showed you a couple of those, haven't I, John?
Yes.
Yeah, I've showed you a couple of those. I have yet to take a track casting, though, which is on my list of things to do to take a track, because I found numerous tracks there. These are five-toed tracks. The toe orientation is not that of an ape. It is that very similar to ours, although the curvature is different. The curvature is different. If you study a human footprint, and most of the genuine, you can never, unless I casted it, I can't say that's 100% genuine, but from the ones that I trust from trusted sources, you look at, there are certain differences, but in general, as a rule, they are very similar, apart from normally bigger.
If you could send me a couple of those images again, I'll check and see where they are, but just in case I can't find them, I'll include them on the posting for this podcast so other people can see
them. Yeah, by all means.
But this, your sighting now, which, as I said, it's interesting, possibly not a big, but possibly something else, but it leads me into the final area that we're going to talk about today, and that is, what do you think we're dealing with here? Is it purely an unidentified biological creature, or is it something else?
Okay, well, as we were talking about just before, my first sighting in that area, before I found footprints, before I found anything like that, I was confused. I'm quite happy to say to anybody who asks me, I had my suspicions, of course, because I can put two and two together, but I couldn't confirm anything. So that basically instigated my whole research, my active research of this. There's plenty of people out there that will claim to be a researcher that sit at home and they look at images that other people have taken and they listen to accounts that other people have said. And while that is good in building a knowledge base, you cannot, there's no one out there that can dispute this fact. Seeing it yourself, going out and physically seeing it in front of you, smelling it, touching it, feeling it, there is nothing that is going to be a substitute for that. You can look at thousands and thousands of images, and this is where it goes almost back to Patterson-Gimlin. You can look at thousands of images, but unless you've actually physically seen that yourself, you can't guarantee 100% that that is genuine. So when I saw this creature, black, really black, like sucking light in black, there's no shine to it. And bear in mind also, as I said, there was some very fine rain pretty much most of that day. So the leaves were wet, the tree, you know, the stumps on the ground, on the clearing were wet, the bark was wet, everything had a sheen to it. Everything was almost glossy, if that makes sense, because it had a very fine layer of water on it. This thing was not. This was black as night. It was sucking. I just describe it as sucking the light in, because that's what it looked like. And at that point, I didn't know whether this was some kind of supernatural creature. I didn't know whether this creature was, a biological unknown creature. I didn't know whether this was some kind of extraterrestrial, you know, at that point in time, all I had was very little information that I personally got myself. So which is what instigated me, boots on the ground, researching the area. At that point, I didn't know. Very soon after I found footprints, very soon after that, I had another sighting. Now, this sighting was very different from the first one. Very different indeed. I was probably about 2.5 miles into Area A, and I'm walking through. And I'm walking, the dog's off the lead. She's running around. She's having a sniff. We've seen this massive, great hare. And it was just, I've never really seen anything like it over here in the UK. It was just massive. It was probably, you know, best part of 60, 70 centimeters tall. It was, you know, not fully extended, just sitting on its haunches. It was massive. And that bolted off, obviously, down a great hole. And we were just basically having a look around for anything that we could see. So we're walking through, and then suddenly the dog just drops to her belly. Her hackles come up, and she's baring her teeth, and she's growling. And I'm thinking, what the expletive is going on now? Because I'm looking where she's growling at, and I can't see anything. All I can see is wood. And, you know, it's very thick. It's very, very thick, especially at that time of the year, because we're talking March, April time now. And it was everything was green. Everything was lush. Everything was growing really, really quickly. It was really thick everywhere. And, I'm scanning the area as I normally do, because after seeing the first one, I thought, well, there's no way that nothing's going to catch me. Ironically, no way in my stupidity. So I'm just scanning the area. And as I'm scanning the area, the dog, if you can picture it, is on my left-hand side, and her head is at my 3 o'clock position, looking almost through my legs and growling and snarling at something on my right-hand side. I can't see that. I'm thinking from encounters that I've heard, that I can't say that they were true, but from the general consensus of encounters, and you have to listen to 100 encounters and try and take the similarities between all these encounters to try and get some kind of basis of knowledge. And I'm thinking, well, there's always going to, if there's a family unit, if there's a family pack, because there has to be more than one for it to be a biological animal. You can't just have one. There's got to be some kind of population, breeding population or whatever. There has to be, they're not going to be asexual. So I'm thinking, I'm looking around, and probably I'd say around about my 11 o'clock position from where I'm standing, there is this creature again walking away from me through thick undergrowth. I caught about maybe a couple of seconds again of it, maybe 3-4 seconds again. Again, seemed like an absolute lifetime, believe me, but in reality, I have to put it down to just probably that little of time. And this thing was charcoal color. It was browny black and had what looked like almost like a silver sheen down the middle of its back, almost like a silverback gorilla, except that this thing was massive. It was its shoulders, well, at the bottom of its shoulders, you know, its like armpits were over my head. It was absolutely massive, this thing. And it didn't look at me. All I saw, I caught of it, was as it was walking away. I didn't really hear very much. I did hear walking, and I heard movement, but at that point, I can pretty much say I was transfixed on this thing's shoulders. This thing's shoulders were massive. They were just really, really it's very difficult to describe it unless you've seen it. And it's very similar to Patty. It's very, well, but much more muscly. It just looked like the Incredible Hulk, but obviously not green, charcoal and hair covered, walking away from me.
So you did see hair, so this was not the same creature you saw the last time that was just sort of a black void. This had, you could see hair on this.
Oh yeah, I could see hair. Yeah. I could see hair. I could see muscles in its back and shoulders. I could see the up to around about its elbows on its arms, because bear in mind it was walking forward, and I could see it. It didn't bob up and down. It was almost lumbering through the forest, but it wasn't.
Was it taller than you?
Yeah. Definitely taller than me. Yeah. This was Big Daddy, I think, because it was massive. The other one in stature was probably around about the same build as me, but thicker on the legs. And bearing in mind, I only saw half of it because half of it was behind a tree. But that one was very, very black, very matte black. This one was not matte black. This one was charcoaly, browny black with this silver streak down its back. And I just couldn't understand. I was just in complete and utter jaw-dropping moment. It's very difficult to explain. I see so many people saying, you know, on Facebook and on groups and all this kind of stuff, why didn't you take a picture? Why didn't you take a picture? Why didn't you take a picture? Well, let me tell you, I had basically a GoPro with me. I had a digital camera with me, and I had my mobile phone, which is an iPhone, with me. I think actually in my hand at the time. So I had three means, forms of digital photography on my person. Yeah. There is nothing that I was thinking about other than I can't believe what I am seeing and how big this thing is. And I literally, you see, you know, it's like a cartoon when their jaw drops. That's quite literally what happened to me. I just saw it and I thought, I can't mentally deal with what I'm seeing. My eyes are seeing it. My brain is trying to process it, but is coming up with error. So it's. Yeah.
Well, this seems to happen. At least a lot of people seem to describe the same thing, where for whatever reason they have cameras and they don't think to even turn them on, or they do and then nothing shows up.
Yeah.
So that brings me back to my original question about
what I think.
You think we're dealing with something other than just a biological unidentified animal?
I can pretty much categorically say from my personal experience, and I am not saying by any means that someone somewhere in the world has not seen a rainbow multicolored Sasquatch smoking a Marlboro Light while eating a McDonald's and have a Diet Coke in his hand. I'm not saying that that isn't necessarily true. If you believe that, that's fine. But what I can categorically say is the prints that I found, the tracks that I found, the depth of the tracks that I found, the things that I have seen do not lead me to anything other than a biological creature. I do not think this somehow trans-dimensionally flips from one universe to another or anything, just other than it's very good at what it does. And what it does is hunt. And any hunter, you know, hunting 101, if you want to find something, you want to stalk something, what do you have to do? You have to become concealed. You have to work with the environment to become part of the environment. And that's what they do. That is what they do. I have seen flashes a couple more times. And obviously I took a video and had that very strange thing, which I'm not going to say what I think it is, but I've had that thing in my video as well. So I personally, as I say, I can't say from anybody else's point of view. I can only tell you from my point of view. This is not some extraterrestrial creature. This is not some interdimensional creature. This is not a paranormal thing. This is a flesh and blood, biological, unknown creature.
Well, that's interesting, because I thought after you described the first sighting with something that definitely didn't look like anything normal, that you would think differently.
The thing is, I have found tracks of different sizes that would initiate a thought process of a family group. I have seen the large charcoal, almost with a silver, whitey silver streak down his back. One, I have seen the much smaller one, completely black, and I've seen sort of almost smaller than the other one, but more orangey, browny coloured creature. And I really don't think that a paranormal creature would leave a footprint. I really don't think that it's to that point where, you know, you have to think of this, you know, I have to think of it in a skeptical way, and I also have to think of it in a logical way. That for this to be a reality and not some kind of paranormal entity, if this is here, which I can personally vouch for, but not everybody can, which is fine, because up until this point, I thought, well, up until seeing it, I thought, that's a great story. It's very entertaining, isn't it? That's great. And if there is, they're not going to be here in the UK. Where could they live here in the UK? The UK is small. We haven't got like the Adirondacks. I can't even say it now. Adirondacks.
Adirondacks.
I can't even talk now. We haven't got anything like that here. There's thousands and thousands of square miles where you are. Not necessarily exactly where you are, but in your side of the pond. Over here, we haven't got that. It's relatively small. There's nothing even anywhere near that size. So this is just a great story, isn't it? But then,
which would lead more credence to the fact that there's something more going on, that you can't find them in that concentrated of an area.
Yeah.
But we can talk about this more on the next time.
Yeah, definitely.
We talk about Bigfoot, because I think that's a good spot to leave off.
Yeah.
Because there are many sightings that were reported that has to do with other sightings as well. So, well, we can talk about that on our next talk, though.
Yeah, that sounds great. If you'd like me back, I'm there.
Yeah, well, we'll continue this conversation. I think that's a great spot to leave off. We can pick up the next time just on this area. So
that's great.
Thanks so much for sharing your information. And did you want to give your Facebook page again?
Yeah.
Did you want to let people look at that?
Yes, by all means. Go on Facebook and look up the Jevning Research Group. Jevning, spelled J-E-V-N-I-N-G. Jevning for William Jevning. And if there's anyone in the UK that's had a sighting of anything in this subject, cryptozoological, if we're talking Woodwose, if we're talking Sasquatch, under any other name, you know what we're talking about, a hairy hominid, please feel free to contact me on jrgengland@gmail.com. So, yeah, that's it. And remember, just keep skeptical.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Phil. Until next time.
That's great. Well, it was great talking to you, John, and look forward to further conversations.
Okay, well, again, I'd like to thank Phil for talking with me, and we will continue our Bigfoot talk on a future show with Phil. But for now, you can find more on this topic and many other topics at our website, mysterioustopics.com. This is John. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.